listening to The Couples Guide Podcast.
I'm Ryan.
And I'm Talia.
We're both licensed marriage and family therapists, and today,
like every day,
we're debunking myths and delivering truth about dating, relationships, and everything in between.
Trust us.
It's awesome.
Good morning, Talia. We're recording episode 75.
That is so cool.
It is very cool. I am feeling joyous and my heart is thumping.
Oh my
can
gosh.
Feel it in my body.
Yes.
All of these things. I just have such a positive connection with you. Very nice.
It makes me feel so cared for when you say that.
Hmm.
It's closeness, right?
It is closeness. Nice. Today on the episode,
yes.
These are the themes we're talking about, how emotions and emotional intimacy and physical intimacy, how they intertwine, how they relate, how they influence one another.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as humans in communication, we like to organize our experiences and break them apart and say, hey, so I feel this, or this is the physical piece to this and what's going on. But really, I mean, we're just super complex. It's all the stuff. It's all the stuff that connects. It doesn't necessarily have to be that emotional intimacy and physical intimacy are separate. They're actually really, really intertwined and close. So I wanted to address that and talk a little bit about what we know from our therapist chairs about how that can show up in relationships and some of the dynamics and experiences that couples have when they started tuning to this really, really cool relationship between emotional intimacy and physical intimacy.
What do you see or experience as the most common presenting area of growth, to say it very nicely,
uh-huh.
that couples come in with when intimacy is threatened or is not present?
Yeah.
What is the recipe you see?
Well, what I see is one of these, emotional intimacy or physical intimacy, has withered, where they're actually missing that ingredient for the recipe. So maybe it's a couple who have gotten into a pattern where they only have physical intimacy, and that's the only way that they know how to connect. Or on the flip side, they have a stagnant sex life, and they're only really able to connect emotionally. And then, to be honest, by the time you get to my office, your emotional connection is like anger and frustration connection. It's not vulnerable and safe. And
well, there are feelings.
those are definitely feelings, and we are going to connect very loudly over them. But you know, a lot of times, that's what happens. Is that that's the only way couples can feel each other. But still, there's these other pieces of getting close without those loud dynamics. And when what you're saying for that recipe that comes in that people struggle with, that I'm thinking about, is one of these two big camps have been neglected and withered, even though they're so closely related. So you can use that, like what they are doing, to window into and support that withering vine and grow that by reattuning to a different piece of intimacy. So mm-hmm. I don't know if that's where you're going with that question, but that's yeah. what I notice when people come in. They kind of forget that there's two pieces to this. There's technically more, I'm assuming, but it's nice to organize it this way.
Yeah, I see, similar to what you're sharing, that the common complaint, I will just say it, the common complaint is that, how would I put this? The common complaint is we are no longer being physically intimate because we are no longer emotionally intimate, and that's either shared by one or both parties of, mm-hmm. you know, a dyadic couple, mm-hmm. that they are disconnected on one level, and so they're disconnected on another level. Like if you imagine your body as a huge elevator, the brain floor or the heart floor are having a disconnect, and so the genital floor is having a disconnect, right? Yeah. It's like, I don't want to do the closest, most possible intimate thing with you if, especially for women who come in my office, I don't feel emotionally safe.
Mm-hmm.
And then we talked about this a bit before recording, when often when men hear that, it's filtered as like, what do you mean you don't feel safe? Like, we have a roof over our head. I've never hit you. Like, what's going on here? Safety for us is not necessarily the same operational definition as safety for a male counterpart. So I see a lot that there's this withholding almost, whether it's conscious or subconscious, there's the withholding of physical intimacy, because if I don't feel emotionally close to you, I'm not in the mood, right? The brain is the first sex organ. I don't want to be touched by you. I don't feel close. I don't feel connected to you. And that's the most amount of connection we could have. No, thanks. It's not, and you let me know, because you are a man, that it's not that you don't want to have emotional closeness when you're being intimate, but that's maybe not something that would preclude you from enjoying intimacy.
Mm-hmm. Well,
depends.
With the caveat that I do want to say that I think like it's not necessarily a gender divide about safety. So I want to talk about safety just in general this, because that is an important part of emotional intimacy. On the differences with male-female levels of safety, what stands out to me as you're sharing this is the cultural influence that cisgendered people can have that bleeds into then, hey, well, how they grow up and how they end up experiencing safety in a sexual way. Cisgendered boys and then men are taught in our dominant culture that sex is X, Y, and Z, all these things that we get taught. And there's a lot of issues with some of what is taught in that. But the point is, they're really taught that sex is okay for men and that it's something to be proud of and to strive for. And it's an important piece of being manly. What's important is that they're not taught that being emotionally attuned and connected with their feelings and their partner's feelings are also those great things. If anything, they're only taught that, hey, yo, well, you can be angry, but you can't be scared. You can be mad, but it's not okay to be sad. So what ends up happening is when that's what cisgendered boys and men are taught in culture, they get stuck with the only way to feel intimacy with their partner is through sex. They've never learned from their mentors, their other male peers, their culture, that there's other parts of intimacy available, such as this emotional intimacy. They only know how to be close. That's what I see when you can have some people, some men, because we're talking about men right now, come in and they have no sense of connection with their partner, but they are always craving sex. And I'm not talking about like just someone has a high sex drive, which is cool, and everyone has different levels of sex drives. But this is someone who's like, part of that craving is they only know how to feel connected with another human through sex. That's an important piece of this puzzle. And honestly, like even when I say that, I actually kind of get almost sad when I think of someone like that, because we all have these desires for closeness and connection. And if we've been taught by our mentors, peers, and culture, the only way to feel close and safe with someone is while having sex, then it's going to be a pretty limiting way to like have a fulfilling connecting relationship or other peers. So to bring it back to what you're talking about, safety is different. If that's the kind of structure we're talking about for men, it may not be the exact same thing of safety, like you're saying, for everyone, but it's that there's this learning that happens that sex is connection. And I think a lot of men don't attune to what's safe for them in sex, because that yearning for connection, that intimacy is more powerful than the safety drive. And they've also experienced, no, sex is safe. Hey, we got the roof overhead. I'm not going to hit you. So can't we just connect and fuck? Like, is that okay? Can we do this? What's up? I hope I brought that all together, because I think they're all intertwined dynamics.
Yeah, they are. And I think this is where I like to discuss like masculine versus feminine energy, like transcending the body almost, but there is evolutionary drive theory at play, that masculine experiences safety when it's productive, right? That's why the masculine is the doing energy and the feminine is the being energy. if I'm trying to do and you don't want me to do, you want to just be because you're not feeling safe, right? It's kind of this like emasculation without a, sometimes it's intentional and sometimes it's not intentional. We withhold admiration, appreciation, sex, attention, food, like I'm not going to cook you dinner, whatever it might be, because we're conserving energy by what we're not doing. But then sometimes that can be like, okay, well, I don't want to, you want to do me, but I'm done, or I've been doing all these things for you. And all I get in return is being done in that way, right? Mm-hmm. Like, what are you doing for me? Not just you doing me, mm-hmm. to use the, again, the energetic language.
Yeah.
That I sometimes, you know, obviously literally and figuratively doing, but there's this kind of not tit for tat, but this hot energetic hot potato, if you will, that if I don't feel provided for in a relationship, I don't, in that way, in like the standard masculine, like doing way, I don't want to provide in the feminine. Right. I don't want to give, or actually rather, I don't want to receive. I'm not open to receiving. I'm not open to being penetrated by any of the offerings that you have. If I'm all walled up, if I'm defensive, if I don't trust, if I don't feel safe. And so this is that core, what I work with couples on, this is that core dynamic of let's talk about what has ruptured the trust. Let's talk about the fact that women are, and this is true of even, a couple that is a dyad of two women, women are feelings-based creatures. That is evolution. That is how we are hardwired. That is not like you have shared, it's hardwired in men, but that is not truly actually how testosterone works in the brain. That's not a feelings-based. Most men would be horrified to be called feelings-based. They toughen up. That's part of societal construct and mm-hmm. part of biological and evolutionary construct as well, because that's a sign of weakness. Weakness means death, right? For us, weakness means we're cared for, right? I can't be the weakest link because I'll be cut out of the herd. But if I'm weak and vulnerable and you want to come in and care for me, right? That's okay. I can show those feelings. And this is the nuance of working with couples in the office versus talking about it, obviously on a podcast, that each couple has a different dynamic. But when we're looking at that felt sense of safety, right? The giving, the receiving, the being, the doing, all of this is needing to be in a harmonious flow, like an equilibrium or homeostasis, if you will. And that can be really ruptured by you used to provide me something and now that's not happening. Okay, well, you used to provide me something and that's not happening. And then they're all the way to the point of, I'm going to withhold the opportunity for you to provide that because I don't think you're doing it right. I've told people here before, I work with a lot of couples who have like high alpha complexes, as I like to call it, or the female in the relationship is really high on her masculine drive. And then they're wondering why their sex life is not doing well. They're, aside from any trauma or being closed off, that's a separate topic. If I'm so in my masculine at work, I can't shut it off at home. And similarly with my partner, where's the feminine energy? Right. And it's kind of like one person has to do it. Like we've talked about in family systems, one person has to be the identified patient, right? Somebody's got to do it. And sometimes it's the guy who chooses by choice or by force to fall on the knife and be more feminine. And then it's complained about. It's this whole cycle. So I like to just uncover a lot of that. What was it like in the beginning when you first met? Is that something you want to get back to or not? If it is, that's one path. And if it's not, we got a 2.0 this. We got to reconstruct what it's going to feel like a good equilibrium for both of you in your own right, in your own way, to feel safe enough to be intimate in both the emotional sense and the physical sense. And it doesn't always have to be 50-50. We don't have to go have a nice talk and then we have sex, right? But there's this experience of building that emotional intimacy and closeness and reliability, right? Will you respond when I send you a text? If I call you when I'm at the store to ask you to pick up something, like the littlest small things, bits for connection that you can put money in your emotional bank account, you're swimming in the emotional intimacy, right? And macro and micro scale. So when we want to be physically intimate with our partner, both of us can feel like, okay, I'm ready to receive and I'm ready to give, either simultaneously or, you know, taking turns.
Yeah. Friendly reminder, I know we've said this a bunch on episodes, but, you know, texting is foreplay, like, and not necessarily like actual sexting, but just connecting with someone in the morning and you're saying, like, hey, how's your day going? Like, that is foreplay. And that, and the reason we have said this multiple times is this this emotional intimacy that you're describing is that is a bid for connection. It's a moment of connection. The text may have nothing to do with sex. And in fact, I'm talking about times when it has nothing to do with that. It can be something as like, hey, what are you having for lunch today? But that is our inside emotional world that is all part of us being social bonding mammals that, hey, here's this person who's responsive to me. This person I reach out to cares about me. I matter to them. I'm sharing. They matter to me. All of that is part of building that connection that is then going to pay off when you are in person. And whether that's paying off for more emotional connection of safety, where it's like, hey, cool, we were checking in today. Now we can talk about more of our day or more of the things that are going on in our internal world. Or it can pay off in that physical connection of, yeah, I feel so good and trusting with you. That's helped create this safety. We can now go to one of the most physically vulnerable places that we can do, also most physically pleasurable, having sex.
Yes. And I've noticed with couples I've worked with over the years that the experience of when intimacy, and we've talked about this in previous episodes, like how to reintroduce intimacy and in those episodes, why might it not be there?
Yeah.
So to whoever's listening, go back and listen to those episodes if what I'm about to say is not complete enough, that when intimacy has left the building for any amount of time in the relationship, it can be difficult. Sometimes if this is the only reason it's difficult is something that isn't a regular pattern in your relationship can be difficult to introduce or reintroduce, right? Mm-hmm. Changing a date night. Once you have kids, I highly recommend carving out a specific date night. That could be a new routine, right? Routines can change and will change over the course of a long-term relationship lifespan. Intimacy, entering and exiting the building, so to speak, is going to be one of them for various reasons. If it is due to lack of emotional intimacy, when physical intimacy is trying to be reintroduced, this is especially important to understand the drive differences, that what we get out of the relationship, and this is something in, like, I think it was my Gottman 3 training that we talked about with oxytocin and all the neurotransmitters, women are swimming in oxytocin all the time. When we feel pair bonded and we're there, like we're just, it's like we're swimming, literally, like I'm moving my arms like I'm swimming. Not Michael Phelps, but I can swim pretty well. You're swimming in it all the time, right? You do the dishes for me, oxytocin. You do this, oxytocin. Like, I'm cool. Men really only get it in large doses when you have an ejaculation or orgasm. So when we as women are like, oh gosh, he wants to be with me all the time, or every, you know, especially if intimacy hasn't been introduced and the guy's like trying to make a move or this or be intimate, it's almost this like, ew, why are you like, I'm not, I don't want to deal with that right now. I'm not in the mood, right? All the way from like, I have a headache, I have a this, I have a that, or like, no, I'm not feeling close to you right now. And so I don't want to have sex with you. He's trying to feel the closeness potentially that you feel all the time. So I'm not saying that as like, just go ahead and give in. Clearly, like, discussions need to be had, but if we can divorce in our brain what it would do for us and try and join and see what it would do for our partner, or understand the like biological response it would have on our partner, we may get more of what we both want. So I just give that as kind of like a little biology kind of neurotransmitter lesson, that not everybody does the same things for the same reasons. And where sometimes we would use that to get close to our partner or what have you, yes, physical intimacy is used to be close to our partner, but they might be wanting to have a hormonal release, which would then motivate them to do all of those other things that you want them to do to then have you be able to feel close to them. So it's like, if you can not wait until it gets to this gridlocked chess match, if you're starting to notice intimacy is dwindling, seek out couples counseling then. Have a discussion with your partner if they notice what you notice. And if you're like both like, yeah, like what has happened and you can't get back on track, if you're able to, even if it's books or podcasts like this, do something to treat it at that level, because it is difficult. I think you may see this in your office. It is difficult when couples come in after a year or two of no intimacy to work backwards from there. It's, and I tell them, I'm like, honest, I'm like, you're coming in kind of not at death's door to be morbid, but like, we're 2 years into a really gridlocked cycle. So, well, the expectation that it's going to be backed up, everybody's putting their parts near each other after 3 to 6 months. I don't know how much there is to uncover. So we might have a journey ahead of us to get back to you both feeling what you need to be feeling for this to continue, for intimacy, both emotional and physical, to be reintroduced.
Well, it seems like you're talking about more like both parts have withered on the vine and like there's no ingredients for the recipe. And that is where it's like really baby steps of starting to uncover, hey, how are we as individuals? And then you do real slow very slow, like stepping stone baby steps of like introducing small bits of intimacy. And couples therapy is the first thing of that. It's, hey, you're going to start talking about your relationship together. But to pivot a little bit from something else you're saying that I wanted to go to is the bigger idea of, we're trying to uncover this information that's kind of hidden inside of each of us in a relationship or what's going on between us, because maybe until we've listened to this episode, we didn't know this was the dynamic. And so I think it's really useful to take some of these ideas and, like you said, kind of get out of our own experience and start trying to understand what's going on with our partner, so that when your partner hasn't been texting you all day or hasn't been doing the dishes or anything, but then turns to you and says, hey, I want to have sex, there can be a part of you to be curious about it. Oh, I wonder if that's their bid for intimacy.
Yes.
If that's their bid for connection.
Yes.
Again, I want to agree with you. That doesn't mean, great, I'm just going to have sex with them without a discussion. But it can help go, oh, this is my partner longing to connect with me. Maybe we can talk about how to do that in multiple ways. And then also bring in the other piece of the emotional connection and talking about it and feeling it. That where I want to go back to is safety, which is so important. Because one thing we need to talk about on the difference with men and women with safety too, is it's really important to acknowledge not just what you said about how women experience sex and their bodies and hormones and the being experience. They also, when you look at people who are likely to have physical violence and sexual violence in their past, ding, 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 women. So all of that means safety has more than likely for most women. Can we just say every woman? There's been some level of lack of safety created around their bodies. I'm sure there might be one woman in the world who hasn't had that, but let's just, I mean, I think we can pretty easily say every single woman has had lack of safety around their bodies in their lives. And most women have had literally violence towards their bodies in their life. So when we're talking about safety, it's just like I was saying, there's the social construct or social development with men of how they're only socialized with sex, not emotion. Women are brutally socialized with lack of safety with their bodies, which means it really is so important to have such safety. Maybe I shouldn't talk more on that because I am a man, but I want to at least have that piece out there and acknowledge that's an important context when we're talking about safety in a relationship, particularly if women are part of that relationship.
Yeah. And it's evolutionarily hardwired in us. Even if we look at, what's that book? It Didn't Start With You by Mark Wolin, the trauma, inherited trauma. It could have happened at some point in your lineage and your cells will remember it. And so that's why earlier making the caveat of we can do another episode on that if we want, but this episode is more designed for if you're not feeling safe due to the micro, like the you and you relationship between your partner, like the betweenness of just the two of you. And there hasn't been historical evidence to not rely, or there's no reason to doubt that you would be safe, whether it be with anybody else or this current partner. Yet there's still this feeling coming up of a lack of safety that we need potentially different things to feel safe. And that would be being appreciated, right? That we know that from relationships, being appreciated, basically being interacted with in a way that feels kind and loving, like you'll have our back, right? You'll be able to protect us, because at the end of the day, you could easily kill us. Most men carry their dominance in their upper body physically. We are usually smaller than our counterparts, right? Like, we literally could die. Like, if you look at it as a brain biology thing, like, that is a very real experience. Not that we would ever think you would kill us, right? We're not saying that that's what's happening, but deep, deep down in our brain, that is a risk. So why would I take that risk? And this is a question I ask a lot of my couples, like you mentioned earlier, that feeling of some of the couples I see, it's not both partners that are not wanting intimacy. It's one that stopped it and withheld it. And the other is usually like, hi, I would like that back. And the withholding partner is, I'm not ready. I don't feel safe. I don't trust. I don't this. And in many ways, there are valid breaks and ruptures in that the string of trust that that person has evidence to go, yeah, I don't really want to continue. And I've asked partners this. I say, what are you worried about if you do have sex? Is it the actual act of sex? Most say no. It's not about physical pain. And I'm not saying that can't be a reason, but what I'm sharing specifically, it's not about physical pain. It's not about not enjoying the intimacy with their partner. It's not about they're not good at sex. It's not the actual act of sex. In the couples I work with, most of the time, the woman is the one withholding, just going to say that because that's my caseload. And the experience is, well, I don't want to do that. And then he feels like he doesn't have to change any of the other stuff that I want him to change. Mm-hmm. That's why sex is being withheld. That's why intimacy is being withheld, is not only there was the rupture in trust at some point, he didn't fix it. And so now I don't want to be close because I don't want to reward the quote unquote bad behavior, or I don't want to let him think that he can get away. And I'm just like, okay, we're having two different conversations here, right? Yeah. Like emotional intimacy and physical intimacy can go hand in hand and often do go hand in hand. When we feel an emotional rupture and we try and take it out or withhold it in the physical sense, we're not having the same conversation as our partner. We're not on the same page because we're not on the same level of that metaphorical elevator.
Yeah, the intimacy rupture has led to those different conversations. You're at different levels. Yes. But at the end of the day, what it is, hey, can I trust my partner? Is my partner safe? And do I matter to them? Mm-hmm. It's all that. And so you can actually, you know, this is what we do in with our clients, but we can actually like shift the different conversations into the same conversation of, hey, if you're withholding because you want a behavior change, okay. Yes, let's all do the dishes. Got it. And let's get away from that behavior. What really matters underneath that is, do you feel valued? Do you feel respected by your partner? And that's one of the big themes that I like to do to bridge these two pieces of intimacy. We're talking a lot about safety. That's an important piece, to have safety with emotional connection and physical connection. Mm-hmm. How else do we have emotional connection? We feel that our partner cares about us. That goes back to the text example of foreplay. Mm-hmm. We feel like our partner respects us, is interested in us, understands us, because there's something so connecting when you can turn to your partner and share your experience and they go, I get you. Oh my gosh, all of these are such important pieces of emotional connection that deepen emotional intimacy. When you can do those kind of things and attune to that, that then of course will bleed into physical intimacy.
Mm-hmm. I have, go ahead.
And just the last, like, it doesn't always have to go that way. I think more commonly, because it's not in our culture to do that as much, where we see more the sex and less the emotion. But there's, you can go the other direction too, if there's safety, where, hey, we have a sex life. Why don't we attune to, in this physical intimacy, communicating physically with our partner, you matter to me. I understand you. I respect your body. I understand your body. I care and you matter to me. So I'm going to be inquisitive while we're having sex about your body. And you can start shifting in the other way from a physical connection into an emotional connection. And I just want to highlight that, like, kind of back and forth, but it's all the same stuff. It's all this, do you matter to me? Do I understand you? Do we respect mm-hmm. each other? Are we loved and safe together in our relationship?
Mm-hmm. And the I would say to add the, I have some neuroscience to quote, because
it
supports, you have no clue what the hell is going on in your partner's brain. Like, neither of us do.
Yeah. Nope, never ever. So I'm not going, mind readers, especially not neurocognitive mind readers.
What if we were? No, I'm gonna read this to everyone so they can marinate it in their brains. So the focus on emotional safety is particularly crucial in sex for women. If you expose men and women lying in a brain scan machine to explicit or subliminally sexy pictures, everybody's brain lights up. Everybody's brain. Only in women does the cortex, the judgment and control center of the brain, light up. Women's brains naturally pair up desire and safety, like I was saying earlier. Mm-hmm. Sexual intercourse is much riskier for women, so women most often need to check out the relationship context to talk as part of foreplay before allowing themselves to descend into conscious act of desire. Women may be physically aroused, but not necessarily translating that into explicit desire, like wanting to have sex. Mm-hmm. So the new evidence that women are more sensitive in the relational context is also evidence of needing safety. So the desire often follows arousal versus the classic model of sexuality where desire comes first. So desire is in response to interactions with their partner. So a woman can be totally healthy, normal, and never experience that spontaneous sexual desire. Everybody has a different drive. We've talked about that in another episode. The research helps us as couples therapists explain to a husband that the fact that his wife doesn't come on to him or instantly respond to any of those signals, like we talked about earlier, the making of the moves, it doesn't mean necessarily that she doesn't desire him. And the emotional context he creates is key into moving that into a sexual or physically intimate space. So it's how we approach that and knowing that if we're both following that innate hardwiring. Again, we both have, it's like responsive versus spontaneous desire aside for this research. If my brain is hardwired for that and my partner comes on to me and I've already been feeling and swimming in the oxytocin and my love languages are being spoken, my apology languages are being spoken, everything out of the bedroom makes me feel like, ooh, okay, I can save. When I'm judging and perceiving in that moment, right, when that part of my brain lights up, I can be more easily moved, not convinced, but move into, ooh, this feels good. I don't need to judge. I don't need to check out and think about my grocery list and this, 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 and that, right? So knowing that our brains are very different is something helpful because it's less about your fault. Why don't you want, it's let's look at the brain piece of it and how do we get you both on the same page to win? It's a scoop of emotional safety and intimacy and a scoop of physical safety and intimacy, and you blend that into a delicious relational milkshake and everybody gets a sip.
I want a milkshake. Mm-hmm. I think the only thing I want to add to that, because I love all this, is that emotional safety is so important, I guess, from my chair.
Yeah.
Because attuning to that can allow for individual emotional shifts, which open up the physical part. Okay, what do I mean by that? So mm-hmm. I think everyone, I know you're talking specifically about how for women's brains and how that affects their desire versus arousal. But for everyone, our like individual emotional world influences what we can do in sex. So that can be someone really stressed with work and then hey, I can't get an erection because like, I'm just like super overstressed. Or, right. Hey, there's all these to-dos and chores I got to do. And so now I can't get an erection. So like, you know, whatever, it's that. And I'm only leaning into the male part because we've talked about the female part, but it makes perfect sense that when there's all this individual stuff going on, it can really impede our desire and sexual performance. Well, the safety connection can allow that to happen where you can set some of those things aside with emotional attunement and physical attunement together, but you can set those aside to where it's easier to set down the chore list. It's easier to set the stress down. Or imagine starting to have sex and it's okay to bring the stress in. I'm not saying I'd recommend that all the time. I'm not saying that's where I want to be, but what if you felt so safe with your partner that it's like, okay, we can start having sex, but I may not get an erection because I'm so stressed with work right now. And we bring that in and talk about it. If it's mm-hmm. a safe place, what could honestly happen is now you get this emotional connection with your partner and you feel better. And lo and behold, stress is gone. Well, boing, what's it doing? You know, it's like, there's these ebb and flows that are really important. So all of that example taking off of from this research is, if you attune to that safety and that connection, all those individual pieces of how we're holding emotional whatever in our head and hearts, that can actually be a soothing balm to whatever's going on individually. But safety is so important. Safety is like such a, I mean, I'm on my soapbox about how important that is to attune to.
Yeah. And it's, and my soapbox is that it's different for men and women, and understanding you are not your partner. You are not going to know exactly how they think and feel, and they are not going to know exactly how you think and feel. So the way that you can start talking about it is using their language. We are feelings based. You are more fact and opinion based. Neither has the corner on this. Just if you want less conflict, try this out and let me know. Just trust me on this one. Well, if I want to know what you're going to do, I'm going to ask your opinion of it. You are a different breed because you have been trained in this, but like the standard person does not have like the emotional piece of it. So I'm going to ask your opinion, and you're more, if I want to know what you want to do, I'll probably ask your opinion, not how you feel about it. If you want to know what I'm going to do, ask me how I feel about it. Right. So just key little just linguistic differences can also help foster that safety, because when you ask in a way I can receive, boom, I feel understood, I feel close, and I feel safe. And that goes both ways, always in friendships, relationships, et cetera. It's a great way to try it out. Talk to the other person in a way that they can receive. Mm-hmm. That is my last tip.
Nice. This is all just looking at, there is hidden information inside of all of us. We're uncovering some of it for our listeners. And then, like you said, a great tip and trick, then be curious and think about where your partner might be different from you, and maybe ask in a way that's a more curious way that is good to understand them. And then you have even more of this hidden information of our internal worlds coming out, which will create that safety and that connection and everything that you're hoping for in your intimate world. So,
yep.
Thank you so much, everyone, for listening. As always, if you have any questions for us, or you would like us to address a topic or question on the show, shoot us an email, ryanandtalia@thecouplesguidepodcast.com.
Yes. So you can also tune in for my Q&As. I try and do a few per week on my Instagram @taliabombola. I will do my best to answer it there. And if not, if you really want like a long form answer, just like write that on there, like podcast, please. And then whatever your question is, and we will get to it.
Perfect. Once again, thanks so much. Take it care, everyone.